When we think about someone having a psychotic episode in New York, a lot of images come to mind, but we rarely think of someone who looks like my next guest. Zach McDermott is a comedian, a writer, and an attorney. He's worked as a public defender in Brooklyn for the Legal Aid Society. He's also an author whose work has been featured on This American Life, Morning Edition, and Gawker. Now he's written a memoir. It's called Gorilla and the Bird, a memoir of madness and a mother's love. It's published by Little Brown and Company. It tells the story of his journey from his diagnosis with bipolar 1 to finding his way back to the life he left behind and his mother's unwavering commitment to him. I spoke with Zach McDermott in February, and we're rebroadcasting that conversation for you now. So, Zach, you start the book by describing your Uncle Eddie and his challenges with mental illness. So why don't we start our conversation there? Tell us a little bit about your uncle.
My uncle was really scary to me until just before he died, when I was 15. He was a paranoid schizophrenic. He overdosed on PCP numerous times, and he was actually sent to a psych ward and committed for the rest of his life, the day I was born. So my mom was going into labor with me, and he had recently overdosed, and men from the state mental hospital in Topeka came and picked him up that day. So he used to visit on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and he looked a great deal like Charles Manson, and he yelled a lot, and he said a lot of nonsensical things, and sang a lot, and he scared me until I was 13, 14, and he would yell in my face, but I realized like it was just his way of playing eventually. And so I would yell back at him, and it was this nice little moment of bonding we had toward the end of his life. I think early exposure to mental illness is one thing that prepped me go into the public defending field.
And I do want to get, of course, to your work as a public defender and your work with and for clients who suffer with mental instability and mental illness. But going back to your childhood, of course, it would be scary for a small boy. But at any point, did you become anxious about becoming like your Uncle Eddie?
I talk about in the book how my brother and I seems had always been kind of competing to both become Eddie and competing to not become Eddie. Mm-hmm. He was really cool other than his, severe mental illness and his mental incapacity, if that makes any sense. I mean, he had, like, great style. He was into cool music. He was, not that it's cool to smoke anymore, but, you know, he was always smoking and just kind of seemed to be a general rebel without a cause, but he was, you know, really without a cause because he lived 350 days of, you know, his every day in a psych ward of every year. But, you know, he was a hellraiser pre that, and we just flat out thought he was cool. But when we both would show kind of signs of problematic behavior in middle school and high school, I think occasionally he was there as a warning, like maybe that's what too close to the sun looks like.
Right.
Sorry about that. I'm in a bookstore. That's the phone ringing.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Let me, before we go any further, ask you how you prefer to talk about your own diagnosis. Do you call it an illness, a condition? In the book, you talk about BP1. I mean, this has become, the nomenclature has become in and of itself something I think we have to put on the table before we proceed with your story.
Yeah, I'm not super sensitive about any of that. And I also understand that, you know, I talk a little bit about the word crazy and how we're willing to slap that label on people when we do, in fact, mean mental illness a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a certain, I think it's asking a lot of people to have, like, the vocabulary 100% correct when trying to access this issue that maybe they haven't dealt with much in their personal life yet. And I think what's really important is kind of a normalization of these conditions, so I guess I use the word condition, and familiarizing ourselves with symptoms of these conditions like bipolar 1 that I have, which we're somewhat shockingly to me, rather uneducated on as a society. We know the symptoms of a common cold by the time, you know, we're in first grade, second grade. We often don't know the symptoms of certain common mental illnesses until we have them or someone we know and love has them, which can be quite costly, you know, from a financial standpoint, but also just from a psychic pain standpoint for our loved ones and for people that end up in mental institutions.
Right, which is really the tremendous value of your book. It really examines the toll this takes on not just the individual as this sneaks up on a person, but on everyone in that person's life. So tell us, if you would, if you could, describe your first episode and how it led you to, of all places, Bellevue.
So I hadn't been sleeping well for a few weeks, maybe more months, and I was doing stand-up comedy at night in New York City, and I was working as a public defender during the day. I wasn't getting enough sleep, which is both a symptom and cause of mania. Eventually, I walked out of my apartment in the East Village and came to believe that I was being videotaped by secret TV producers and cameras as part of a pilot based on my stand-up act. So I ran through the city for 10-12 hours following strangers, thinking they were extras in my TV production. Ended up late October, shirtless, barefoot, crying on the side of a subway platform. Two NYPD officers came up to me, cuffed me for safety purposes, and I ended up being taken to Bellevue, which is the notorious psych ward in NYC that a lot of criminal defendants are sent to when they're found mentally unfit to stand trial. So I'd sent quite a few clients there before I became a patient myself.
Right, right. And you even write that you had represented countless people in this same situation. But of course, when you're in the situation yourself, you're lacking that clarity in that moment, right? Throughout the book, a clearer and clearer picture emerges of what BP1 is, bipolar 1, and you unfurl this condition throughout the book. Are you trying to help the reader understand how you came to get a clarity about this condition? Is that how you chose to write about it?
Well, for me, you know, people sometimes ask, and I think it's because it can be difficult traditionally for people to accept that they have a mental illness that they must deal with. But people ask me sometimes if it was hard for me to accept that, you know, my diagnosis was correct and things of that nature. Well, when you run around New York City thinking you're on television for half a day and you're not, and then when you're in a psych ward and your mom comes to visit you and you think she's perhaps an actor, part of your, coming in and out of your, quote, TV production, once you regain lucidity, or at least once I regained lucidity, it was hard for me to deny that something horribly wrong hadn't just gone down. So it was easy for me to accept, like, okay, this is what you say I have, and then when I read the symptoms on a piece of paper, it described my previous several months to a T. So that wasn't difficult, but I think by kind of detailing the symptoms and the experience that I went through, it can hopefully allow some people to kind of recognize this if it ever happens in themselves or to a loved one, because we're just very ill-equipped to deal with these sorts of emergencies that are not all that uncommon, and it's a small step, but it's a fairly easy first step to take for us to just kind of educate ourselves with some of these indicators.
And you had, as you've touched upon, this professional irony of having been a public defender representing so many people who have mental health challenges. And then when you returned to work at Legal Aid after your first time at a mental health facility, your boss said, and now I'm reading from the book, "Nearly everyone here has some big trauma in their past. We're underdogs. That's why we do it." Is that right, Zach? At least for you, was that part of the reason you think you were there in the first place at Legal Aid as a public defender?
Well, I know when he said it was true for me, I mean, I grew up around gang members that my mom would tutor after school around our kitchen table, and we'd have Crips and Bloods alike studying around the table while my mom helped everybody with homework, SAT prep, ACT prep, that sort of thing. And I just saw the path that many of these guys took, and due to circumstances totally beyond their control, it seemed prison was a more likely outcome for a lot of them than, say, going to college was. And you kind of start asking questions about, to use a buzzword, I guess, your own privilege, and you start to think, like, well, you know, is it because I'm such a great guy that I'm going to end up almost, you know, as a foregone conclusion with a master's degree, or did I win a fair number of life's lotteries to end up in that scenario? So I think we've either, most people that are drawn to this work, which is kind of thankless and low paid, you know, you have to have some sort of motivation that puts you there to begin with. And I think that for a lot of public defenders is born out of witnessing some suffering in their background. So, and that's rang true for pretty much everyone I've got to know well at the Legal Aid Society.
Right. And I have to spend the last bit of our conversation focused on your mother. You mentioned her work, which you spend a lot of time talking about in the book. The subtitle of the book is A Memoir of Madness and a Mother's Love. And it is so sweet. The title of the book, Gorilla and the Bird, refers to your nicknames for one another. And so much of the book is about her commitment to your wellness. There's a beautiful photo at the back of the book of you and your mother together when you're a little boy. Talk about, and as you reference, you see your mother in that first, after that first episode, and you still refuse to believe that it's your mother. And then even, you think it's an actress. And then even when you recognize it's your mother, you're still in this Truman Show mode of trying to work it into your fantasy. Well, it might be my mother, but I'm going to figure out why she's here. It's not because I have a mental health problem. So talk about your mother and this beautiful tribute you've written to her and for her. And Granny's also a part of this, your grandmother. Talk about the family memoir that you've written from the family perspective, because it's not just your story. It's a family story.
Well, these mental illness stories always touch the family, and I think in many ways it can be much harder on those that love us than those that have gone through a mental health crisis, because I wasn't lucid for a lot of what I went through. My mom obviously was for all of it, so she comes to the hospital and sees her, you know, 26-year-old lawyer son wearing this taxi driver mohawk and this handlebar mustache with just a wild look in his eyes, and I've lost 25, 30 pounds. I can't imagine what that looked like coming through these doors that are marked danger of patient elopement and seeing some of the people out of control on the ward that she saw. But to write about her was difficult in some ways, because she is so saintly and does so many things for so many people that you almost feel like if you just write it accurately, you're being too over the top with the praise and she becomes an unrealistic character. But she's a bird to so many people, and by that I mean protects and looks out for people and puts their interests above her own. She has this beautiful quote I like where she says, you know, and it really informs how she cared for me when I was in the hospital, which is, when a person is at their worst, when your instinct is to be repelled by them, what you really need to do is go toward them. And this is kind of like step one when people ask me, what do I do if my friend's having a mental health crisis? The first thing you can do is kind of just stay there and be in the pocket with them and not be scared and run away. And it kind of just demonstrates, like, yeah, okay, well, when you come out of this phase, we'll still be here and we'll help you figure out your reality and figure out what's going on. So, yeah, in a few minutes, it's really hard to sum up what she means to so many people in Kansas and what she's meant to me being at the psych ward for every minute of every visiting opportunity, every time I've been there, at great cost to her personal serenity.
Well, Zach, it is a beautiful book. I'd love to spend much more time talking with you about it, but what I will do instead is commend our listeners to read it. And I thank you very much for the courage it must have taken to write it and to revisit those experiences. And I thank you for taking the time also to speak with us about it. I hope you'll come back and talk with us more about this book and your other writing as well and your other projects.
Yeah, thrilled to be here. Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking with former attorney and writer Zach McDermott about his book, Gorilla and the Bird. It's a memoir of madness and a mother's love. Thanks to Zach for being with us. Zach McDermott.